Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 9th of October, Anno Domini 2010, and you, oh, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Peter Skripka.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff you can use, things to choose, nothing to lose. And as you see, we have a guest today. I will introduce him in a moment, but first, I'm going to read our news, first news item of the week. Verizon Wireless, the United States' largest cell company by subscribers, has revealed details of its long-term evolution, or LTE, rollout at the CTIA Wireless Association Conference in San Francisco. Company President Lowell McAdam has indicated that the initial deployment of LTE will take place in 38 major metropolitan areas. McAdam also confirmed that LTE will be introduced to 62 commercial airports. Markets slated for the initial launch this year include New York City, Chicago, Los Angeles, Boston, San Francisco, and a little town called Rochester, New York. The 4G network, as it's called, aims to cover approximately 110 million people at launch, 200 million people by the end of 2011, and 285 million potential customers by the end of 2013. McAdam also announced that Verizon had experienced plenty of interest from smaller rural carriers that want to lease the company's wireless spectrum in order to offer wireless broadband in areas where such services do not already exist, specifically places where Verizon is unlikely to reach in the near future. Verizon has reportedly already struck deals with 5 rural broadband operators and is in negotiations with a further 12, although no actual details have been announced thus far. Verizon executives have previously suggested that the Federal Communications Commission should channel government subsidiaries to rural carriers that want to enter into the operator's LTE licensing program. If Verizon's effort is approved, rural carriers that license LTE spectrum from it could receive money from the government's Universal Service Fund to aid the rollout of LTE network technology in undeserved areas of the country. The cool part about LTE is that rates can be as high as 12 megabits per second downloading and as high as 5 megabits per second uploading. Your mileage may vary. So, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is this: Rochester's getting Verizon 4G. The choices are can't wait, let's see what the pricing is, I don't do Verizon, my phone still has a rotary dial, and I don't live in Rochester. So far, we have about 46 people who voted. And so far, the overwhelming choices, yeah, let's see what the pricing is. But when you're done with that, I know that simply clicking a button on a poll is not enough for you. Our fans are nothing if not vociferous. One might say curmudgeonly. So you want more. That's okay. We have more for you. Take a look at the little yellow box underneath the poll. Click on Give Us Your Opinion, and it will take you to my website, AskNick.com.
That's AskNick.com.
And you can enter the poll, which is: how excited are you about LTE 4G phone service? So far, we've got 8 people, one or two of whom actually had something to say about the question, which is so unusual for us. And, of course, that's our question to you. How excited are you about LTE or 4G phone service? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. But before we get to your calls, we have a guest today. You heard his name earlier, Peter Skripka. He's the National Account Manager for Bottom Line Solutions and knows everything there is to know about cell phone plans, all that stuff, cellular, this and that.
A way to set the bar nice and high for me.
But no pressure, Peter. No. So we're delighted to have him here today to talk about the new Verizon LTE rollout, a couple of other things, what all that means for us. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you.
And let's start with that LTE rollout. Now, Rochester made the cut, which is very, very exciting. One of 38 cities. How did we get in the list?
Well, it's amazing because when you look at New York State, just as an example, obviously you're going to cover New York City, right? Major metropolitan areas, they get all the best stuff first. But, you know, this initial rollout list does not include Buffalo, Syracuse, or Albany. So we got a little lucky here, and really it goes to, and there's a lot of marketing done behind this stuff, that we've got tech-savvy folks here in Rochester who their take rates on these kind of products are relatively high.
Yeah, we are a very tech-savvy product. Somebody was saying that if you look at the list of the cities, it's the NFL franchise cities, yeah. Except Buffalo.
Well, they're marginally in the NFL.
Yeah, yeah, right.
They're headed to Canada.
You know, well, you know what? It is never too early for a Bills fan to say there's always next year.
Yeah, right.
Personally, I start in early August.
We don't. You look. Yeah, right. West Lafayette, Indiana, made the list.
You are brutal.
I am. And West Lafayette, Indiana.
Yeah, and West Lafayette, Indiana is a home of Purdue University. And right. So it gets to that same idea that you've got some tech-savvy folks who are going to, at the very least, try this product. And there's a lot at stake here on this initial rollout.
Well, we've certainly got, here in town, we've certainly got the U of R. But more importantly, we have the Rochester Institute of Technology.
No question.
Some of the most tech-savvy people in America are on that campus.
I remembered back to when the area code was splitting. That we got the new area code because we were growing faster and had more technology companies, and Buffalo got to keep the old one because they're old and stagnant.
Thank you. We look forward to your emails. That was Steve Ray, ladies and gentlemen. You can send all emails to Steve Ray
at jazz901.org.
Jazz901.org. So we made the cut, which is very exciting for us. Assuming that we're going to actually get a 4G phone, and you know that's
yeah. When do we get ours?
Yeah, when do we? Well, don't ask. He doesn't. Okay,
no.
I know. If you're going to call in, I know you understand this, but let me make this clear to our listeners. If you're going to call and ask questions, you need to understand that Peter, while he is insanely knowledgeable about all things cellular, does not work for Verizon or any of those cell companies. So don't bother asking him questions about Verizon or any of those cell companies, and don't bother berating him because you feel you have been done ill by Verizon or any of those cell companies, because he doesn't work for them. And it's there's no point in it.
I can tell you this much. In January at the CES show, Verizon executives are already on record saying they're going to launch 6 new devices in January. They're going to name 6 devices, I should say, LTE devices. So we can expect the USB dongles for laptops to be first, and then handsets. And these are going to be your smartphones, your BlackBerries, your Android phones. And so early January, CES, that's where those announcements are going to be made.
Yeah, but also I'm excited by the term devices because it might also include tablets.
Oh, no question.
That's very exciting.
And really, we're kind of blurring the lines here when we start talking about tablets, because you've got things like RIM's Playbook that is it a tablet? Well, it's connected to your BlackBerry, and it's authenticating through your BlackBerry server. It's not a standalone device.
Right.
It's taking that internet access off of your BlackBerry. So we're going to see embedded chips, obviously, in laptops. We're going to see the USB modems, so real handy. With, speeds that you get to keep all to yourself. You're not sharing.
Right. And I'll tell you what, though. What would work for me, and if there's anybody from Verizon listening, first, come talk to me about devices.
Yeah.
Because I do, I do reviews and stuff like that, and many people hear us. But secondly, what would work for me is the ability to pile on plans. So if I've already got a Verizon phone, I'd like to be able to add that dongle to my current plan, assuming I've got a 4G plan, right? And I'd like to be able to add that tablet to my current plan. Instead of having to start a whole new plan for every device, I'd like to just be able to make it an add-on. Now, theoretically, that saves me a little money because adding a line is cheaper than buying a whole new package. Mm-hmm. So theoretically, Verizon is losing money. But in the long run, I'm more likely to buy more stuff if I can do that.
Well, and there's no question. There's going to have to be a lot of consumer education going on in terms of how this data is priced. I mean, the days of unlimited data are gone.
Yep.
It will be megabyte, gigabyte pricing. And we're gonna see whether it's a big bucket that everyone on your account shares from or on your own line. That's still to be determined, still to be announced. But there have to be changes because the business model is such. They've spent billions of dollars to bring this technology. They're not going to give it away.
The voice model sort of did the same thing a few years ago, that the plans used to be independent for each phone you had. And then they came out with the family share plans. I think it's because Peter turned down the jack on his a little bit.
So. Oh, there you go.
There's
right.
four. There's a number four on that box, and we don't have four mics, right? Maybe if you plug into that one, it will help. But, yeah, so it used to be every cell phone you had was its own plan, its own contract, and then they went to family shared minutes, so now the whole family shares minutes. But now we're starting to see that with devices, too, that the cell phones, and now you've got the dongle for your computer, you've got your iPad or other tablet device. It'd be nice if you could sort of share all that data together and not need to pay extra. You know, right now AT&T is charging $20 extra if you want to tether your iPhone, and that's on top of the $30-$40 you're already paying for data on the phone.
Right.
You want to get data to your computer, you got to pay again.
Right.
In their
well,
mind.
And I'm sure it's going to be tiered. So again, we'll be in the situation that, for example, right now, if I wanted to watch a movie over Wi-Fi on my iPad, it would cost me $35.
Right.
Over 3G.
It's over 3G. That's my point. And so if the prices are going to be that high, there's a real dichotomy between people like Google and Apple who are telling you use this phone or this pad for everything because it does everything, and Verizon who's saying, yeah, you can't because you can't afford it.
Well, yeah, there's no question. And you're going to see an even further blurring of the lines when it comes to voice. After all, voice is all digital now. So we're talking just more ones and zeros going over that same network. And it's going to likely contribute or draw from that bucket of data that you're purchasing for your laptop.
Yep. And the same is true of text messages.
Sure. And how much data is a voice call? That's where, getting back to what I was saying about consumer education. How are we going to know what kind of plan to buy? So they certainly have their work cut out for them.
Well, one of the things that I do like is that on my Android phone, I now have a little app where I can see how much data I've used, how many minutes I've used, how many text messages I've sent.
Right.
It is where I discovered that while I've been apparently paying for unlimited minutes, I've not been getting unlimited minutes. So we're in discussion now.
Yeah,
with my carrier about that, but that'll be resolved. That'll be easy enough.
That's just one of those things. Somebody, how bad they're going to hose us?
No, somebody slipped a. Yeah, right. Well, they need to make money, and I get that.
Yeah.
It's a whole lot of new technology that has to go into the tower, and they're not going to give it to us for free.
That I understand, but again, you know, just like some of the other stuff, like I went kicking and dragging into. If I wanted a particular phone, I had to now pay the extra $10 a month. Just because I want to be able to do texting. Yeah, that's all right. I got it.
Well, wasn't text originally on one of the subcarrier lines that are there anywhere, and it doesn't
doesn't cost them any money because it's on a subcarrier line that they're already putting out anyway.
Well, they're sitting there, but they're saying, well, you also get the web. And, you know, we've discussed this over and over again.
Yeah, no, you don't want the web.
I know! And I still have it.
Well, I use it.
Well, yeah, you're...
Yeah, my situation is different. I use it for work. Right now, I've got an app. It's a program called Nagios.
Synonymous?
Yeah. It's a program called Nagios, which will monitor all my machines. And if there's a problem, it'll send me an email or whatever at work. Okay. But... I also have a program called Nagroid on the Droid, which talks to Nagios. And so when there's a problem, it beeps me. And I can see exactly what the problem is just by looking at my phone.
Okay.
So, for example, this morning, my SMTP server went critical. So that was what it really was telling me was you're getting a metric bucket load of spam, and it was having a little trouble cranking through it. Okay, I get that. And once I knew that that's what it was, I was fine. And every day at 11 o'clock, my backup server gets a high load on it because it's finishing the backup, and Windows has all these stupid things it does at the end of closing files. So, yeah, I get that. But in general, if it's 2 o'clock in the morning and that thing goes off, yeah, I got a problem.
And you want to know that.
And I want to know that. So for me, it's a work-related, that sort of thing is work-related.
All right, and my one contention is all right, if I have one of the other phones, I can add, for the extra 10 months, they can turn on the feature on any of these phones, the data or the web part. Well, if they can turn it on, why the H can't they turn it off and not charge me, just give me straight phone and text?
That was actually one of the things that came out last week is Verizon is admitting they've had an error in $1.99. Well, $1.99 mystery data charges have been appearing on people's bills. Generally, and I've done it on my Verizon phone accidentally, where I want to push the button to turn my speakerphone on, and I accidentally push the button to open the web page. Well, I don't want the web page, but I've started it, so they start billing me $1.99 a K or whatever it is.
Right.
So Verizon is now admitting that, yes, there's a problem. They're going to try to stop it, and they're issuing refunds, and it's going to cost them $50 million. $50 million, whoopsie.
And the way you do it is you make the first K free.
Yeah.
So even if you start a web page and stop it, you can do that a couple of times if you're fast enough.
Or yeah. Butt dial.
Right, yeah, the butt
dial. I've done butt dial. And
running up your minutes.
Right.
Had a number of folks sit there and say, you all right? I go, what?
Yeah, you called me.
Yeah, you called me.
I once got a call from you and heard you talking to somebody. I suspect it was your father.
Probably.
I was sitting there listening to the conversation and said, I'm probably not supposed to be in this conversation without letting them know.
You said hello, you know what I mean?
I whistled into the phone. I tried to get your attention, but the phone was clearly in your pocket. I was hearing these two muffled voices.
There's
muffled
a video on circulating YouTube of people doing things even more intimate than that dialing. Yeah.
All right,
but Verizon is saying that every month, 87 million customers accidentally hit this web button. So that's $300 million that Verizon's not going to make anymore.
Yeah, well, they'll have to get over it. They'll charge us for the other stuff. When we come back, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more Peter Skripka. We're going to talk about LTE versus WiMAX. I think we'll talk about that next. Back in just a couple of moments with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Skripka, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And Peter Skripka.
Sorry. At 23 minutes after the hour, this is Soundbites. We're back. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or toll free at 1-800-790-0415. Back to our discussion about Rochester getting WiMAX and LTE in just a minute. But first, Microsoft is set to deliver a record 16 security updates this coming week on Patch Tuesday, Microsoft's monthly visitor. To patch a whopping 49 vulnerabilities in Windows Internet Explorer, Office, and SharePoint. Andrew Storms, Director of Security Operations for N-Circle Security, called the massive update daunting again. Four of the 16 updates were tagged with Microsoft's critical label, which is the highest ranking they have in their four-step scoring system. Another 10 were marked important, which is the second highest rating, while the remaining pair were labeled as moderate. 9 of the updates could be exploited by attackers to inject malicious code into vulnerable PCs. Microsoft said in its usual bare-bones advance notification of the update schedule for release October 12th. Microsoft often labels remote code executable bugs, which are the most dangerous, as important when the vulnerable components are not switched on by default or when other mitigating factors such as defensive measures may protect some users. Next week's Patch Tuesday is a record on almost every count. The 16 updates, Microsoft calls them bulletins, are a record, beating last August's 14. The 49 individual patches easily exceeds the single month record of 34, which was first set in October 2009 and repeated this past June and August. Microsoft's been shipping alternately large and small batches of fixes, with the larger sized updates landing in even numbered months. So October's big numbers shouldn't come as a big shock. In August, for example, the company issued 14 bulletins patching 34 vulnerabilities. September's patch, however, included only 9 bulletins that fixed only 11 flaws. One theory about the large October updates is that Microsoft wants to beat the year-end financial and retail push by most companies, which go into lockdown mode in the last 2 months of the year when they don't update their systems. So it's going to be pretty interesting. 12 of the 16 bulletins are aimed at Windows, either the desktop or server editions, in some cases both. Two will affect Office, which are actually Word and Excel specifically, and are likely patches for one or more file format vulnerabilities in those applications. One of the bulletins addresses a problem with SharePoint, which is Microsoft's enterprise-grade collaboration server software. According to the advanced notification, the SharePoint update will be related in some way to Office Web Apps, which is the online edition of Microsoft's Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote applications. Several apply to the newest versions of Microsoft's operating system, Windows 7 on the desktop, and Windows Server 2008 Release 2 on the server side. So are you daunted by the size of this upgrade? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
And just think how much it'll cost when we go to tiered, metered data rates.
Well, and that's an interesting problem, isn't it? What about updates to the Windows 7 phone? Are we going to be charged for those?
Well, yeah, you got to figure that's part of your data package on your handset. I mean, they'll still determine those and publicize that, but absolutely, that's data. Data is data.
It's going to be that's going to be an interesting question that people have. We have with us Peter Skripka. He's National Account Manager for Bottom Line Solutions. A cellular expert.
Thank you.
He's not actually cellular himself. He's an expert about things cellular. He's actually pretty human.
Multicellular.
He's multicellular. Exactly. So we were going to talk a little bit about now the AT&T has WiMAX.
Sprint.
Excuse me. I beg your pardon. I look at him and I immediately think AT&T because he's an Apple guy. Sprint has WiMAX,
right?
And that's their 4G solution.
Right.
And Verizon has LTE, which is their 4G solution. What's the difference?
Well, two competing, quite different technologies here. When you look at how Sprint has rolled 4G, they've rolled it through clear wire, right? They've tried to limit their exposure on the cost to themselves, to Sprint, and really Sprint is their own worst enemy when it comes to having deployed 4G. It's been fits and starts. They got out ahead of everyone else, so first to market, congratulations on that. But about 3 years ago, end of 2007, both AT&T and Verizon Wireless publicly announced they're going LTE for their 4G networks, and it's taken this long to start, you know, to build it out. Well, no question, LTE has gained a lot of traction internationally as well, as becoming really the de facto standard. Now, the folks over at Sprint don't like hearing that, but the fact of the matter is, it's the old VHS versus beta,
right?
You know, WiMAX is a perfectly good technology, but the adoption is on the side of LTE. WiMAX, just by the nature of it, requires more cell towers per, per square mile, right, for the area, and then it comes down to the frequencies at which they are transmitting on these towers. Clear and Sprint own frequency at a higher level, 1800, 1900 megahertz, and that's where they're moving their WiMAX transmissions. Verizon Wireless spent billions of dollars at the 700 megahertz spectrum auction. The vacated analog TV spectrum, billions of dollars to be able to move it at 700 megahertz. And what that does means fewer towers, further penetration, better in-building penetration. So if you're in a bunker like this building, right,
yeah.
you've got better penetration of that 4G signal. It makes a difference because it's going to make a difference on the user experience, on the data speeds, the amount of spectrum that they own. Verizon has chosen to go 10 megahertz times 2 of that spectrum, so they're going to be able to push more data than even other LTE carriers. So there's a lot going on out there in terms of real pointy-headed engineers who are putting this stuff out there, but they found a way to say, you know what, we're going to do this and we're going to roll it right. It's no secret they've been rolling fiber out to the towers in advance of launching this product to make sure that there aren't the bottlenecks, right, the choke points, that unfortunately some carriers have experienced even on their 3G networks, where they just don't have the backhaul capacity to get that data out to the internet.
Right. By the way, for those of you who want to know where Verizon is rolling out first, if you go to droidlust.com, the very first article is LTE in the ROC. It lists all 38 cities and all the airports around the country that will also have 4G.
Right. Now, hardware is going to be a big deal. Obviously, you're going to have the right hardware.
Because so the phones we have today, my Droid will not do 4G.
You're out of luck. Right. Yeah. So you're going to have to look at that new handset. And again, they'll be announcing, I know Verizon will be, in January, six handsets to do that. The USB dongle. I'm very interested in getting a USB modem and putting it through a Wi-Fi router and being able to route that signal because there's enough bandwidth there to share.
Sure, if you've got 12 megabits.
Sure.
And yeah, that gives you quite a bit of stuff there.
Yeah.
I'm very interested. Now, again, it depends on what that costs, but we'll find out.
Now, the other phone that you currently have on loan, which, yes. Verizon, listen to this, we wouldn't mind all, you know, four of us, testing out too, you know, we do get out there and we do talk to a lot of folks, and I'm sure Nick, Steve, I, and Rob, who,
Linton, Rob Linton, everybody.
I'm not shy, you know, I'm not bashful. I'll sit there and beg for one too, you know, and we'll give it
a shot. But the Fascinate that I have, the Galaxy,
that's a nice
Samsung
screen.
Galaxy, it's got the Super AMOLED screen, which
that'll
is
do
actually 4G? Very visible. No.
No?
No, that's also a 3G phone. You're really going to have to get a whole new phone.
Well, then we're willing to try the new phone.
Well, and the other thing that I would hope Verizon does is waive the one every two rule, right? Well, if you're going to go up to a 4G phone, you're changing your plan to begin with.
Well, and that's interesting because the carriers currently are offering incentives if you're moving from a standard handset to a PDA-type device.
Right.
To get you into that. So if you're eligible, they can do something early for you. It all depends on your contract and your rate plans, but they'll do something for you there. I would expect, and again, don't know for sure, but I would expect that they're going to do something like that to increase the adoption rates on 4G.
Yeah, we all hope so. And when do we stop calling them smartphones and just start calling them phones?
Well,
and the other ones will be dumb phones.
Yeah.
Some people have started calling them super phones because they do more than what the old smartphones used to. So some of the ads I've seen for the super phones.
They're really just pretty much phones.
The latest take rate across all carriers on smartphones is 55%. So as much as we talk about, well, you know, I've got a phone, but I don't use data, people are moving to these smartphones. Think about it. 55% of all these handsets going out of the stores and from the business channels and all that are smartphones. So that means the carriers are getting what they wanted. They've built the networks or, you know, continuing to improve their networks, and they're getting those take rates. And as much as you say, I don't want data on my handset, people are eating it up, whether it's navigation, email, web on the handset. Those are your major drivers for data.
That's another thing that I worry about, which is when we took my daughter to Rockford, Illinois, 800 miles away and 12 hours in the car,
mm-hmm.
I used my Droid for turn-by-turn navigation with Google.
Sure.
So what did that cost me in terms of, which right now is unlimited data, what did that really cost me in terms of bits and bytes, and what would that cost me to do next time?
Sure. Well, and again, based on the application that you're using, if it's optimized for mobile, because you've got a few options, right? The carriers have their own GPS navigation applications that they push. Google Maps is out there. BlackBerry Maps is out there. And they're all going to use different amounts of data. Now, on a standard PDA, we'll call it standard, you know, your BlackBerry, your Windows phones, the rate plans, when you pay that data charge, includes email and web and those data pings on the GPS. So fortunately, for now, that's all included.
Right. All right. Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Tom did from Rochester, New York. Welcome, Tom. What's your question?
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
Good afternoon, I mean.
Whatever you want it to be.
Yeah. I just, my boss, being really nice, has bought me a flat panel TV for a monitor.
Yeah?
You know? So,
wow.
He happened.
Are they hiring?
It's his old workstation, so he has this NVIDIA control. The card 6600, so
right.
It does dual monitors, you know. So I take my old smaller flat panel, put the side, you know, and get them both going. And problem is now, you know, everything opens okay, but now my Word document's kind of like off the screen to the left. I cannot get it back onto one of the monitors when I open Word.
Well, you can't drag it.
No, it's like I can't get to it. It's open, but it's off the screen.
Okay.
It's where it thinks a monitor is, and there isn't a monitor there.
Right.
Right. One of the things that you can do, to solve your immediate problem, alt space is it alt space? Oh man, it's been a while since I played that.
You know,
nobody has Windows here.
Yeah, none of us have Windows.
Yeah, I'm in it. Yeah, you're right.
Alt space will open up the
size
menus,
yeah.
Right? And then you can say F for file.
Press
or
the M key, and then you can use your arrow keys.
There you go. And
to
then
move
you can use the arrow keys,
the window,
to move the window around. That'll get you immediately. That'll solve the problem right there.
Go in the move and use the arrow.
Right.
There it is.
There it is.
You're wonderful.
That's
you.
True. But to solve to solve
and he
the
didn't
other,
even you did, he didn't miss the first time you two even met.
That's exactly right. But he knows. It comes across the radio. Here's the other thing, Tom. What you need to do is to check your display properties.
Yes.
And make sure you've only got two monitors set up.
Yeah.
Make sure they're the right size and make sure they're in the right orientation.
Because they can be
they're like to the left of the big one is to the left of the little one or however you've got that set up. Make sure they're set up that way. Otherwise, yeah, things will appear in the wrong places. Now, one of the problems that Microsoft continues to have is that when you have multiple monitors, often things appear between the two as if it were, if they're the same size, it'll appear in what it thinks is the center of the space, right? The way yours is set up, it may be assuming that the center of the space is somewhere far and away other than where it is.
Well, the NVIDIA control panel is a pretty good little utility that they have for setting bypassing the normal Windows thing and doing its own monitor setup, you know,
right,
side to side. But
right, but you still do need at least this once to go into the regular Windows thing and not change anything except the orientation of the monitors and make sure they're in the correct orientation.
Great. Understood.
There
Thank you
go.
So much.
Thank you, Tom. Yeah, I have a one of my minions has big dual monitors and everything opens right in the middle, where the two butt together because it's one huge space and stuff opens in the center of the screen. So everything opens, you gotta shift it to the left or shift it to the right or whatever he's gonna do with it. And I told him that's a really kind of a small price to pay for those two huge monitors, so shut up.
Yeah, I mean, I've got two 22s, and, you know, I love it. Like you say, I sit there and open up the screen.
I've got a 38 and a 45. Never mind, go ahead.
Ooh.
Never mind, go ahead.
Centimeters?
Not gonna touch
that. I've been bragging ever since the metric system came in. Go ahead. I don't even know what that means. I'm sure we'll look forward to your email.
See, that's why I want. We've
leave it up
never
to
mind.
Steve
never mind.
No,
really, never mind.
We've talked in the past about the 43-inch curved monitor, the CRVD monitor.
Yeah.
Beautiful giant monitor, and three of them will give you a 270-degree wraparound. What do we say? It's only $6,000.
Is that all each?
Yeah, and a concierge will come and set it up for you.
What about sound system on it? Now, is that five speakers?
Concierge better come up and set them up and dance.
Well, then you get the THX sound system to go along with it, too.
Yeah, and what's that set you back?
You can get a decent THX-certified computer stereo system for $350, $400.
There you go. Cheap at half the price.
Bam!
Yeah. But, yeah, that's that. So a lot of people are getting dual monitors, but there are things you need to know one way or the other about.
The Apple's just started shipping their 27-inch super high-definition monitor and a really, really nice display on it, too.
Yeah. All right, we are going to take, but you have to have a really good video card to handle those bigger monitors. Going to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Skripka, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Yeah, we are member-supported Jazz 90.1, and I want to take a moment here just to remind you folks, we're coming up on that time again. And what I'm talking about is, like we've said in the past, we come to you twice a year to help raise money. And, you know, it's through your donations and help that keeps programming like Sound Bites, the German Show, and everything else going. And, you know, it's just these two times that we come and say, you know, come on, help us out. So right now they've got some extra gifts going on. You know, if you go ahead and pledge at the $35 level or higher, you can take advantage of it. And so when you call in, and we're going to, don't even think that we're not. The minute you call, the first words out of our mouth is going to be, are you a member? And yep. Nick will very graciously say, and why not?
Exactly.
I mean, that's just the way we are. We are very upfront and personal and aren't afraid to get in your face.
Now, we also have to tell people that the drive starts Monday, but yep. if you pledge today, you actually get extra gifts.
Yep, exactly.
The pre-pledge extra gifts.
You know, we got to maybe
at
talk
the
to Rob.
$35 level or higher.
At the $35
well,
level.
Well, you know, because it brought it up in our staff meeting this past week, you know, about the rum balls. Maybe if we can start getting some folks, you know, when they do call in, say, at the $365 level and above, they could get invited to our Christmas rum ball doing. Because this year's rum balls should be a lot better. And what I'm talking about there, folks, is I finally have a connection.
Yeah.
From way back when I first started doing rum balls, for you folks that don't know. It's a secret recipe, and no, I haven't given it out. But maybe if somebody was to pledge at $1,000
well,
level.
We have to talk to Rob about all of those things first.
But
we can't talk about any of that on the air and make any kind of promises until
right,
we've
but,
talked about
it. This year, though, the rum balls will be made with the original Antigua rum. So like I say, I got
to just want him to bring in the rum. I
really well, I'm getting two bottles of it, so you know, see what happens there. But, you know, again, start thinking it about right now because, you know, if you go even at the $365 level, that's only a buck a day. That's really not a lot. You know, you start putting it through now. I mean, they've got different ways, you know, payment plans and everything else. This station goes overboard. And trying
and
to make it easy.
And they're talking about an amazing gift for the $365
oh,
level,
yeah,
which we can't talk about yet.
Nope.
But really, think about it. It's a buck a day, and it's amazing.
So get ready, you know, and talk about it down the road.
Yep. But start saving those pennies, because we're going to come to you. Right now,
English.
What?
I just found English Harbor Reserve 10-year Antigua rum bottle.
Yeah, unfortunately, you only found a picture of it.
Yeah, it won't. They don't tell you the price until you call.
Yeah, right. If you have to ask, we all know that story, right? Let me go to our next news item right now. Apple has released a pair of firmware updates that fix some charging issues for previous generations of the MacBook and MacBook Pro. Customers have discovered that MacBook and MacBook Pro models from 2007 and 2008 may not charge when plugged into a new L-shaped 60 or 85-watt power adapter from recent MacBooks. To address the problem, Apple has released both a MacBook SMC firmware update 1.0 4 and MacBook Pro SMC firmware update 1.4 for affected models. The updates require macOS 10, 10.5.8, or macOS 10.6.4, left elbow, J, or later. You can download these updates from the linked Apple support pages. Go to apple.com, and there they are. But it may be better to simply run the software update on your MacBook. The update will appear there only if you need it. So, okay, seriously, Steve Jobs regulates what power adapter you can use? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You may not use that particular power adapter, because I say so. Our next caller is Bodan from Rochester, New York. Hello, Bodan.
Hello, gentlemen. Good afternoon on a sunny, salubrious Saturday.
I've
got a question. Using Firefox as the web browser, and I do have the pop-up blocker turned on, but I'm still getting, I don't know if it's pop-ups, pop-unders. If I go to a website and I want to click on something on that, all of a sudden I get another page that opens up, and it says, and I quickly read it, it says, add delivery system. Is that a pop-under or what?
Yeah, it's a pop-under. I'm starting to get them too. We're all waiting for the pop-up blocker to be updated.
Okie dokie.
There's one called Better Pop-Up Blocker, and we're all just kind of waiting for those to be updated. It's astonishingly annoying, Astonishingly.
I almost always find Netflix is hiding behind all of my windows.
Yeah.
You know, it's either something, you know, if you go to a website, even if it's a local television station, you want to click on a story or watch a video, all of a sudden something else comes up before, you know, what you're,
well, that's,
what you
yeah,
want to do.
That's the pre-roll advertising.
I read it, ad delivery system.
Yeah. I've been writing down what all those ads are and resolving never to buy any of those products. I'm not kidding. I'm just so horribly annoyed at those things.
Got infected with a Trojan or some kind of
it's
spyware.
It's getting more common, and we're just waiting for the pop-up blockers to catch up.
Gotcha, gentlemen.
One of the things you can do for the more sophisticated people is you can add doubleclick.net to your host file and point it to 0000. So then it can never load any of those ads. And you'll end up with empty windows, but at least there won't be an ad in them.
Gotcha. But still, there'll be no window open there.
Yeah.
Though.
Right.
So whatever. Okie dokie, gentlemen, enjoy your Saturday, and I will be renewing my membership momentarily online.
That's what I like to hear.
Oh, you guys are a great benefit for the community. People around the country do not know what they are missing by not living in Rochester and listening to you guys. But, of course, they can listen to you guys online.
Another unsolicited testimonial, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you, Bodan.
You are welcome, gentlemen.
Have fun.
And he even called us gentlemen.
Well, he doesn't know us that well. But it was nice of him to do so. The pop-ups are getting a little more crazed, I have to be honest with you. It's the same leapfrog game we play with viruses and everything else. And hopefully...
A lot of times now we're almost seeing a decline in the ads on the side of websites. I've got a program in my Safari browser called Click to Flash, and there's equivalents for Firefox, where it will not play a flash animation unless I click on it. So that leads to the browser not crashing so much. but it also you don't have to see all those ads. So now what's happening is since video is getting to be so popular. There are pre-roll commercials. You know, it's annoying. You want to see this 15-second video, and there's a 30-second ad in front of
right,
it.
Right, right. Golly, I hate that. All right, our next caller is Gil from Webster, New York. Welcome, Gil. What's your question?
Well, just a comment about the operating systems and all the updates and so forth. You mentioned it earlier, and what struck me was I was thinking back, and if I recall correctly, just about this time in 2001, Windows XP was released, and the frightening thing is that year after year after year, we keep getting updates, and I just got an update, last week or something like that, whenever, and the point is, it's been 9 years, and it's still not fixed. So, it was just a sort of a, all this modern stuff is really great, but look how long it takes to get your operating system really fixed. And, by the way, we've had Windows Vista in the meantime, and now we have Windows 7. So,
well, Vista was the equivalent of Windows ME.
Right. Well, but the thing really is, Gil, what happens is, and this, I have a certain amount of sympathy for this, when you have something that's as huge as an operating system, whether it's Windows or Linux or the Mac, and you've got so many different people who work on so many different pieces, and then I have to connect all those pieces together, there are going to be vulnerabilities. What's important is that they patch them. Now, I personally prefer the Linux method, which everything on my system gets patched whenever it needs to be patched. You rarely wait more than 24 hours for a patch. I'm not a big fan of the once-a-month patch, although I understand why they do it, because I'm also a systems administrator, so I do understand that part of it. But you're right. The problem is that many of these hackers are getting more and more sophisticated, so they're finding vulnerabilities nobody knew about.
And most of the time it's things that no one even considered trying. You log in with your username and password. Well, what if I put JavaScript in that field?
Right.
It executes the JavaScript. Well, it's just expecting to see text. So it's things that the programmers never occurred to them to test for.
Right. And you can enter MySQL code.
That was a big one in Twitter. Was it last week or was that this week? Someone figured out they could put JavaScript in a tweet. So in 140 characters, you can write a JavaScript program. And when if you're on the web and some of the Twitter clients on phones, It executes that JavaScript when it displays the message. And it took a couple hours for the bad guys to figure out how to put ads and malware in that. As soon as one kid in Australia accidentally found it.
My comment was more from a, you know, sort of a step back and, you know, look at the big picture point of view. I mean, in a former life, I actually used to write operating systems. And so I appreciate how long it takes. And the only reason I brought it up is, you know, step back and look at our history. You know, we're still fixing, for Dave, I guess, maybe Windows ME or 95 or maybe even Windows 3.1. I don't know. But, you know, it takes a very long time for an operating system to actually mature to the point, you know, that all the errors are fixed. But, you know, I personally am a Ubuntu fan, and as you are, Nick, I believe.
Yes.
And, you know, as you point out, there's a whole host of people out there in the world just, you know, voraciously fixing and updating the code to the point where it's, you know, things happen and then they're almost fixed, you know, before you can blink. But anyway, I just wanted to sort of bring it up as a perspective, because here we are, you know, fixing not Vista, but Windows 7 and things like that. And, you know, all these old operating systems, which you might say are sort of out of date.
Well, what really bothers me is when
we all use XP. Right. I mean, a lot of people, and you know, it's still out there and it's still being fixed. So it's you know, I think the comment is the one that you made earlier about look at these updates and so forth and so on. You know, the big perspective is we're still suffering XP updates and vulnerabilities. And
Well, and the thing that doesn't bother me because as I said, there are people who will find new ways. What really bothers me is every single Windows operating system has had to have a buffer overflow fix. Really? You didn't get it the first four times?
Right.
We have to do it again?
Well, there's so many buffers to overflow.
Well, but somebody at some point ought to stop and say, when I write this code, I should worry about overflowing the buffers.
Yeah.
You would think.
It would be sort of, you might think maybe some automation in there that
you just said the key word, though.
Define a buffer, blah, blah, blah. You know, it automatically gets, you know, generated in such and such a way that all that stuff gets taken care of. You might think.
It's lazy programming is what it is.
Some of that I've read is the way the languages deal with buffers. They talk about Pascal and that your string can only be 256 characters long. So you cannot overflow your buffer.
Right, but then you know, you check. You have a maximum length something should be. How hard is it to check that length? Yeah. Apparently, it's impossible for some programmers.
Yeah, well, and especially in Pascal, then you can sit there and always do the command to flush the buffer.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's a one word.
So,
you know,
so in C, you allocate
one little procedure.
Allocate a variable, 20K.
Flushes it. I mean, I remember that from my days of coding.
You bring up a really good point because, I mean, in fact, so hot buttons is that man was not meant to dereference pointers and things of that sort. Man was not meant to allocate memory, but or programmers were not meant to. You know, modern languages, to a large degree, are sort of very antiquated in the sense that they don't really support, to the degree that, you know, our technology really understands these problems, they really don't support it. And some languages do and have for a long time. And those kinds of errors just don't happen because they're supported by the language. And,
right.
You know, we...
Take as an example. Back in the day, Windows 3.1, Windows 95, had a heap overflow error. The heap is where you put temporary stuff and where fonts go and the bitmaps for icons and stuff like that. And if that got overly full, it would flow into other areas and cause a problem. Well, rather than fix the logic of the heap in Windows XP, they fixed the problem by simply making the heap bigger. So it took longer for the problem to show up. They didn't fix the problem. They just made it longer for it to show up. And I just thought, that is the ultimate in lazy programming.
Well, because the computer crashed every, you know, 5 or 6 hours and reset the heap anyway.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
There's an idea.
Well, that was standard procedure.
Crash every 6 hours.
Yeah. You know what I said about the bills earlier? If you're running Windows, it's never too early to reboot.
Well, that was usually the standard procedure within Windows 98. If you went out, you know, in the running programs in the morning, you just automatically at lunchtime rebooted your machine.
Yep.
Because of the memory leak.
Yep.
And even Microsoft came out with it, you know, yes, it's a good idea to reboot your machine at least once during the day because of memory leak.
And this is why I suggest that everyone put iTunes on their Windows boxes, because they update it like every day and you have to reboot every time they update it, which it makes me crazy. It's an application, and I really have to reboot the operating system because you people can't write an application that doesn't require a reboot.
And hooks into the OS so it can mount your iPod.
I don't care. That's still It's still stupid. But it does make you reboot every day. So a lot of what you used to think of as problems have gone away because you're rebooting so often. All right. Thank you very much, Gil.
Well, I've heard that there's this show on radio that's the greatest known computer show in the known universe. And, there's something about a drive coming up to support this. And, you know, when you listen to all the discussions that you guys have, I just want to stand behind Bodan and say three cheers and support these guys. It's sort of a real privilege to be in an area where you can hear discussions and interesting comments and fixes for your computer. So all you folks out there that are thinking about it, get to it.
Thank you, Gil. That's what we like to hear.
Take care.
Yet another unsolicited testimonial from our loyal customers, from our loyal listeners. We should have two classes of people, members and leeches. You think we should, instead of calling them listeners, they're either members or they're leeches. But we won't go that far. We won't go that far because we love all of our listeners. But we are going to take a quick break while you sit and contemplate your financial obligations to this station. We're going to take a quick, it doesn't even start till next week. We're already starting to berate people for not having pledged. And the pledge hasn't even started yet. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with a whole lot more sound bites. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Skripka, me, Nick Francesco, and each and every one of you. We continue to be the longest running computer show in the known universe, and we are happily ensconced right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1, where we're going to be giving you, starting next week, the opportunity to support us as a member yourself. So it's not just listening, it's participating. Back in just a couple of minutes on Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
And I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Peter Skripka.
At 5 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Vic from Arondequoit on the line. Welcome, Vic. What's your question?
Monday, my PC tools internet security was due to expire, and I decided to go a different direction, and I downloaded the Microsoft Security Essentials. And my computer is like a brand-new computer now. It's fast. It's unbelievable. I'm wondering what you guys think of this product.
Actually, I'm kind of impressed by the new Microsoft Security. Are you wearing Windows 7?
No, I'm XP, actually.
Well, it's good on XP. It's actually very good on Windows 7. I'm actually kind of impressed by it.
That's only word of caution that I have, and I guess this is where I'll be the skeptic, is great. You know, they rolled it out, and it's doing good right now. What about down the road, and how well are they going to support it? Because if they're not doing weekly updates on it, If they're only going to do monthly.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
I don't want today. Any part of it.
And that's sort of been the problem with the big antivirus suites, Norton, the McAfee, all of the suites, is that they bog your computer down so much. Sometimes because they have to.
Well, the new Norton 2010 is very good. I mean, they took it to light when they were getting slammed left and right about how they'd slow the system down and everything else. They now even included a utility in there that shows a meter how much they are using, and just to let folks know, no, we're not using that much anymore. Try us out. And this is where, like I say,
but it's got
to
be
Microsoft
tough.
Tries to do too many things, to beat
right.
all, and then they do it half butt.
Yeah, it's got to be tough for the big commercial companies now that Microsoft is offering a free one. It's not built into Windows yet, which is probably a concession so they don't get sued.
That's the next step.
But so now the big companies are going to focus on their enterprise partners again, and we'll have to see what happens if it does eventually get built in. Now, that there has been the Microsoft malware detection tool. What is that thing that runs? It's part of your monthly update to remove the most common malware. That's been built into the Windows Update for quite a while now. But it's nice to see this Microsoft Security Essentials actually seems to be working pretty well so far.
Yeah, it's not a bad product at all. I'm kind of impressed, and you're right. Of course, you replace McAfee with anything and it's going to be faster, but I've replaced McAfee on a couple of machines and it runs faster. It's really designed for home users. It's not that useful in a business environment when you've got enough machines that you can't walk around to each one individually to do stuff. But for an individual home user, it's a pretty doggone good product.
Yeah, you do have to survive the Windows Genuine Advantage test.
Right.
Which we hear a lot of times get false negative review hits from people that do have right. legitimate Windows.
Right.
Well, I didn't have any problem installing it or anything, and I'm going to try it for a while. I've talked to a bunch of other people who have had it, and they all love it, and I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens.
No, you should be happy with it. It is a good product. No
and question. Like I say, just kind of keep an eye on how often it updates. That's the key.
And let us know.
Yeah, please.
I will do that. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.
You just turned yourself off.
What did I just do?
There you go. Now you're back.
I don't know.
You reached over there and hit your off button.
Okay, so I hit my off button. What's your point? I apparently think I'm done with the show now. What, I don't have the right to be done with the show if I want to be done with the show?
Not when you keep talking.
Oh, yeah, well, all right, that. Apparently, I don't even like the sound of my own voice. How do you like that? All right, we're just going to go to another caller then. Our next caller is Todd from Webster, New York. Welcome, Todd. What's your question?
Question is, my son has a game called Team Fortress 2. It's not working on our computer. It says it requires a DirectX 8.1 level card, and then in parentheses it says requires support for SSE. I don't know what the SSE support is, and I don't know how to determine if the card I'm buying has that. Can you shed some light on that for me?
The whole idea behind these games is they're just getting more and more and more capable and more and more hungry of the what's in your machine.
Photorealistic images. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so in terms of a graphics card for Team Fortress 2, you need something with a whole lot more oomph to it, actually.
I was looking at a NVIDIA GeForce 5200, but again, I mean, it supports DirectX 9.0, but I didn't know about the support for SSE aspect of it. I didn't see any of that listed in the specs, or so I wasn't sure about that part of it.
A lot of times, we're looking it up ourselves here, a lot of times the game's website will list supported cards, and oftentimes that's the best way to go.
I didn't see that on there.
Trying to see what SSE stands for, because there's SLI, and that lets two video cards bond together and act as one giant video card, but I'm not sure what SSE means.
Me neither. I tried searching it on the internet for it, and I didn't have a lot of luck. While I'm calling you guys.
SSE is the streaming SIMD extensions, right? It's actually, that's part of the processor on the board, not the that's not part of a graphics set. That's part of
the CPU.
The CPU.
Huh. All right. It had it in parentheses right next to the card, saying it required a DirectX level card, and then in parentheses it said required support for SSE. So
yeah, that's actually not part of the graphics card at all. It's actually part of the processor series. It's essentially, well, it does graphics. It's essentially a reply to AMD's 3D Now technology.
Okay.
It's an extension to the MMX that Intel first put out.
Right, and
multimedia extension.
Right, and what that is
what the
is
acronym
it's,
stands for.
Streaming SIMD extensions, SIMD. And what it basically does is it does a lot of the, it takes a lot of the graphics processing off of the processor and puts it on this extra little piece of chip that's in there of the thing, and it sort of pre-processes before sending things to the video card. So you need a process, and the reason you couldn't find it, of course, is because you were looking for something to do with the video card, and in fact, that's actually in the processor itself.
So this is an acronym within an acronym. It's streaming SIMD extensions, but SIMD is also an acronym for single instruction multiple data.
Right, exactly.
So it's an acronym within an acronym.
Right. So you need to make sure that your processor.
Okay.
Has those. It was introduced in the Pentium 3. And
yeah,
I have
a Pentium 4, so.
And I think it should, I don't think they took it out. So you should be good.
Okay.
The basic idea is what they're trying not to say so they don't get sued by AMD is you can't use an AMD processor.
Okay.
It's like if you were to buy a game that said you must have 3D Now extensions, you have to have an AMD processor. You have to have SSE extensions. You got to have a Pentium, an Intel processor.
Yeah
it's an Intel Pentium 4, so I should be okay.
Yeah, you should be fine for that part of it.
And one of the requirements pages I found, it's the NVIDIA GeForce 5 or better, or the ATI X1500 or better.
Right, okay. In order to take advantage of the SSE.
Take advantage of the extra stuff, yeah. And that gives you better quality graphics, so theoretically your frame rate's a little higher, so you can kill someone before they kill you.
Yeah,
it's the guys that spend $6,000 on their video card that really know how to play these games.
Right, and then of course when they introduced SSE3, they changed the name to PNI, the Prescott New Instructions. So you could have it and not know you have it because they're calling it PNI. It gets silly.
Newer and newer technology to make things faster and faster.
Right. It gets silly. I apologize for not recognizing that right away because I was like Steve. I was thinking, what is that in a graphics card? And it isn't. But there you have it. All right. We're going to go to back to the phones. Our next caller is George from Greece. Welcome, George. What's your question?
Hi, guys. I got a follow-up from last week. I'm the one that called in with a message about the virtual memory minimum being too low.
Yeah.
And one of the things that was suggested by several of you was to go into the hard drive and clear out some extraneous material. And you told me about going to the temp directory.
Right.
I've gone in there, and I think you also said clear out the ones that would the system would permit you to clear out.
Right, and if it doesn't, you just skip it.
Now, how do I tell, though, whether it would... how the system would be would permit clearing it out or not.
It'll let you know. You get an error message. A box pops up on the screen that says you can't delete this.
Usually a good indication is if you were to look at the date that it won't allow you to delete that particular file, it's usually today's date.
That it won't allow you to delete it.
Right, correct. Yeah, just select all, hit
because
delete.
Because it's in use.
It will say which ones it can't delete.
Now, just let me double check, though. I've gone into the Word directory. And I find the folder temp, T-E-M-P.
Right.
And I find about a dozen folders in there, some of which, for example, have, says 1828, and I go a little deeper, and it's got a Chrome.
Yeah. Word is very notorious for not deleting its own temp files itself.
Okay. But you're telling me if I tried to delete it, then it would warn me when I should not delete it.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep.
And you don't know until I actually tried to delete it.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you also want to delete your system temp files.
And where do I find the system temp files?
If you go to start, go to run, and put in ampersand. Or no.
No. Percent.
Hit enter. That will take you to the temp folder. And anything in there, you can do a Control-A to select all. Hit delete. And again, that will tell you if it can't delete any of the files because if they're in use by another program.
Yeah. You can also go into My Computer, right-click on your hard drive and choose Tools. And one of those, no, Properties, then Tools. And one of those tools is the Disk Cleanup tool. And that will go through and empty your recycle bin, delete all your temp files. It can also compress unused files. I generally don't like doing that because I might want to use them again.
Right.
Then it will take longer to use. But that disk cleanup can also help you clean up space on your hard drive.
It also isn't a bad idea to go through and do some manual cleanup of your documents.
Getting rid of documents that I don't need, you're saying.
Right.
Yeah, I understand that, and that makes perfect sense.
Right.
I was trying to get a little bit of a learning experience out of this in the areas that I'm not as familiar with.
Yeah, the best way to do it is what Steve just said, which is the disk cleanup tool.
Now, and is that pretty risk-free to go that route?
That route, yeah. The disk cleanup tool is pretty risk-free. It really won't delete anything that could harm the system.
So I ought to save the disk before I do that, I assume.
Well, you certainly save your stuff, and of course you should be backing up all the time anyway. Right. So if you are backing up regularly and you've backed up since the last time you created a document, the important thing are the documents you've created.
And that's what I'm backing up. I understand that point.
Right.
But I've not been backing up, for example, this humongous folder that has Windows in it.
You shouldn't.
And
much of it you can't back up because you can't back up open files. And many of the files in there are open.
Okay. So here's the risk that I foresaw. This temp folder has things in it which I'm going to potentially get rid of if I can, but if I made a mistake, I won't have a backup for it.
If you want to back them up, back them up.
The idea.
But the reason they're a temp file is because they're things that aren't necessary.
Yeah, when a program runs, it creates temporary files to while it's working. When you quit the program, it's supposed to delete those temporary files itself.
Okay.
A lot of programs don't.
That now I understand a little better.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Sure. Thank you.
Bye.
We find that a lot of programs are just badly written. I'm sorry, but when a program doesn't clean up after it's, and I understand if a program crashes, it's going to leave stuff. I do get that. And Windows programs crash. I get that. But when you close a program correctly and it still leaves junk behind, that's just lazy and bad programming. I don't care what anybody says. It really bothers me. It really does.
The idea temporarily is that if the program crashes, the next time you launch it, it can use those temp files to rebuild what you were doing. That rarely works.
That never works, certainly not on Windows. All right, we are going to take another break. And you people are not taking advantage of Peter. We have Peter here with us, and you're not taking advantage of him, Peter Skripka. He is, of course, the National Account Manager for Bottom Line Solutions, and he knows all things cellular. Give us a call. You know the number and all of that stuff. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Skripka, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, I'm sorry. I completely...
No, that's all right. That's all right.
I apologize, Peter. Go for it.
I am Peter Skripka,
who is the National Account Manager for Bottom Line Solutions, and he knows all things digital.
When one of us are missing, we pause for the hole, but when there's an extra person,
I just run right over him. All right, kiddies, you know what that sound means. Get your footy jammies on, grab a mug of hot cocoa, sit Indian style in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because if we can slap them awake, it's time for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, yeah. Yep, we're ready, and seems like it's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, I mean...
And it's been a good time, but you're here now. I mean, it's been bleak. We've missed you. That's what I meant. That's exactly what I meant to say.
Remember, I have the controls.
That's right. Did I say that out loud? Okay, go ahead.
We can pot you down. And you ain't coming back up.
Yeah, right.
But okay, Charlie Brown, I've got a saying, and I say it all the time, is I was born at night, just not last night. And let me in, let a number of folks, especially they're into, because I know there's a lot of folks out there that are getting into, helping folks out and doing computer repair and that type of stuff. There's a lot of small shops and all that other stuff. Well, the latest and newest scam, and oh, this is a doozy, is you get an email. And I was corresponding with this individual and down in Florida and wanted to ship up six laptops to have me format them, set them up, and that. Okay. I wasn't sending out any information that they couldn't find, you know, on the web anyways, my name, my address, and all that. I mean, help, you know, it's there on the web page. So I said, okay, you know, I'm going to send, you know, the money up and that and the laptops and that. A couple weeks go by. Don't think much of it. You know, haven't heard much from them. And then last week, all of a sudden, or beginning of the week, I get this envelope. Open it up. Now, the original repair that I was going to do for this guy was only going to be, it was around, say, $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
I get in the mail six American Express traveler checks for $500 each.
Mm-hmm.
With a little note in it. Oh, go ahead and cash these. Send, you know, keep your part. Send the rest of the money down to my person that will ship these laptops to you, and we will, you know, go ahead and he will ship them on up to you, and then you can, you know, keep your part to ship them on, whatever you need to ship them on back, and you know, we'll do that.
That's been going around eBay for a while now. That's
been going on
businesses.
For 100 yeah. years.
So, you know, my one friend came over and looking at the traveler checks, and I mean, they look good.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's like, no. So I was playing them along, really string along. You know, he's like, well, you should have them. I go, no. And he's like, well, maybe, you know, I should get them. But let's see if you can get them. You know, he's tracking it out. And he said, but go ahead and, you know, go cash them, you know, once you get them in that. So I let some days go by, and I go, you know, come back to him. And I says, you know, I think you really should, you know, go ahead and, I won't cash them all. I'll send someone back. You know, I need you to send me a money order and send me the money up because the bank was looking at these cashier's checks, traveler's checks, and they had some questions for me. So, you know, if you want to continue doing this, and that's been, what, 4 or 5 days now?
And you haven't heard word one since.
Yeah, I mean, all of a sudden he's gone. Doesn't have any more interest in me.
There's a classic story of someone who was stringing along one of the Nigerian 419 scammers for months and passing letters back and forth. And you know, it started with, you know, when I launder money, I usually take 20% as my fee.
Yeah, right.
Well, I know another friend that was in one of these scams, and they wanted him to, you know, ship all this stuff down. And, you know, and then they'd say they reimburse him and all that.
Yeah, right.
Well, what he did was took a lot of junk parts. And had them, you know, give them a number so that they could, you know, pay for the shipping of all this stuff to go down there. Well, he literally did this huge box. I mean, this box had to be 3 by 3 by 3.
Yep.
Feet.
Hey, if it fits, it ships.
He loaded it up with old hard drives, you know, parts and everything else. I mean, this thing weighed some be comparable. He took pictures of that and shipped that on down, and it wound up down in Nigeria. Sure enough, it got shipped to, I think, someplace in Florida, and from there it went on out.
Yep.
It's one time that he got, you know, it didn't cost him any money because he got them to pay the cash. Matter of fact, he did make, I think he said $10.
There you go.
But, you know, to keep it in.
Well, it took him time to pack the box. That's only fair.
But he sent them. Well, he sent them parts. It was just all, junk parts.
Right.
So there's where, you know, one that, you know, again, one of the few that, you know, was able to take advantage of something and get back at them. And, you know, folks, we say it all the time, and I can't say it enough, that if you're getting any emails and if you have to stop and think about it for even a fraction of a second, don't do it.
You know, if you're standing on a street corner and somebody comes up with this, your radar goes off and you walk away. Mm-hmm. But on the internet, somehow we're all like, oh, yeah, oh, good. Oh, boy, I'm going to get $100 million from a Nigerian prince.
Street corners aren't that safe much anymore. I've seen some of the news magazines do things with ATMs. They'll buy used ATMs, stick them on a street corner, and people walk up and shove their card into it. It's not connected to any bank. You know, they just steal your PIN numbers.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that where you walk up and the ATM doesn't have a name on it and it's not in a bank. Yeah. I'm generally, you look carefully at the ones that are actually on a bank to see that they haven't had anything attached to them. But if they're in a bank lobby or at the drive-thru, as long as you look at it and see that there's nothing been attached to it, I trust those.
Yeah.
But beyond that, not so much.
I was in Toronto once, and on a Sunday afternoon, we're driving down some main street, and we see three or four guys with crowbars and workman's tools working on an ATM. And I'm thinking, okay, it's Sunday. People don't usually work on Sunday. It's broad daylight. That's pretty brazen if they are burglars.
Yeah, but who's going to question him?
It's the same. Yeah. Look, if you walk through any crowded office with a clipboard in your hand and wearing a tie, nobody's going to stop
you.
If you look like you know what you're doing and don't hesitate, and just like with determination in your stride and everything else, no, they're going to question.
All right, our next caller is Rich from Roch. Welcome, Rich. What's your question?
Good afternoon, guys. The general question is regarding the freeware. And I currently use the following. I got AVG 9.0, Super Anti-Spyware.
That's old.
I'm using Malwarebytes and Adware Free. And first general question, what is your general opinions of freeware versus paid versions?
Well, one, Adware, we've been switching that to Super Anti-Spyware.
Okay.
And now there is a new version of AVG, so just to let the general public know, even if you're using version 9, they've got new AVG 2000, I think it's 10-11.
Yeah. But to answer your actual question, in terms of freeware, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
In general, all the stuff you've mentioned has been part of the security tango.
Mm-hmm.
And I've spent a lot of time looking at the various pieces and parts of the tango. And those are all very, very good products, exceptionally good products. As we always say with freeware or shareware or whatever, if you can donate, you really should, because it helps encourage the programmers to upgrade the products and to take a little more time, spend a little more effort.
And quite
on
often,
the
paid versions give you more features. With most of the malware scanners, the paid version gives you real time scanning rather than waiting for you to scan after the fact.
Right.
Yeah. But all of these things that I use, I'm updating religiously every 2 to 3 days, and I also run each of these every day or two religiously.
You're doing a good job then. There's no question at all that you're doing an excellent job there. And in general, a lot of freeware is very, very good. If you get it from a reputable place or you've talked to reputable people about it, for example, if you go to the Security Tango and download it there, that stuff's been vetted by us. So, yeah, absolutely. If you get it from a reputable place, it's probably going to be pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm. The reason I say that is where I'm working, there's a couple of people in our tech department there who say, why do you mess around with that stuff? Go ahead and pay for the suites. It's a little bit more, but you're going to have everything all in one. It's an excellent job. Buy this, buy that. But, I've had these for a few years now, and really nothing's,
And that goes back to our earlier caller, that a lot of these suites are big and bloated, and they slow your machine down so much.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
if you're happy with what you've got, go for it.
Yeah, and I know they have the extras in there, I realize, but I think I'm concentrating on the basic things that I should be doing and everyone should be doing, and I'm following it to a T, so do I need those? And I'm doing everything, I'm going to say, often enough, and I know I'm not getting the real time, but still, for what I'm doing, in my opinion, and I tell these other guys that I think this is good enough for me.
Yep.
And from what I've mentioned, the items that I'm using, you feel that these are good products, providing you're updating and you're running it religiously.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I recommend it. I mean, that's what I'm using in my shop. Like I say, the AVG, Super Nice Spyware, and Malwarebytes.
And there's a lot of things you can do yourself to minimize the danger. Don't click on links in email. Don't respond to junk email. Period.
Right.
You know, or don't even open the junk email, because just by opening it, they can often tell you opened it. So it's sort of your behavior. And we joke, you know, don't go down dark alleys with $20 bills hanging out in your pocket.
Right.
And you won't get mugged.
And one final thing here. Now, I've heard that it's acceptable to have more than one spiral programs because everyone can't catch everything, so it wouldn't be unusual to have three or so. What do you think about that? Is my mix okay the way it is, or should I?
Yeah, you're good the way you are. One of the things that we always say is that, you know, some programs go deep into the registry but not very wide across the hard drive. Others go wide across the hard drive, not deep into the registry. So having multiples is good, but make sure you're only, if you are running one in the background in real time, only run one at a time.
One at a time, correct.
Because those will interfere with each other. But if it's something that you run by hand, you can run as many of them as you want.
Right. And that's what I do.
There you go.
The one danger there is that sometimes one program will see the other program as malware because it has the malware patterns in them that it looks for.
Oh, I see.
So you have to be a little worried about false positives in that case.
Right, but if you know what the files are and where they are, for example, everything in the Malware Bytes folder is good. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So if something comes and says, oh, you got a problem in the Malware Bytes folder, no, I know that's the data file.
Yeah.
All right?
Very good. Thanks for the help, guys.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome.
All right, once again, I have to berate you people. You are not taking advantage of Peter. Peter came down here to talk about all things cellular. He's the National Account Manager for Bottom Line Solutions, and he's been here today to help us out. He's had lots of great information. Android devices these days outselling iPhones and BlackBerries, 30,000 a month plus.
Yeah, it's incredible to see the growth. And early on, you know, the knock against Android was, well, there's not enough apps out there.
Right.
And you start looking at what are the actual usable apps. I mean, not the ones that my 14-year-old downloads.
Right. How many fart apps do you really need?
Thank you for saying it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And now the Android developer community is growing incredibly. And so we're seeing the apps flowing in. We're seeing the uptake in the handsets themselves, and particularly because it's across carriers. I mean, I look at the Samsung. We talked about the Galaxy S series. And while there's slight differences across these devices, across carriers, you know, essentially the same device, Gorilla Glass, real, you know, nice Android devices running the latest OS 2.2. And, you know, these are getting into the hands of users. I mentioned earlier, 55% of handsets are smartphones being sold. And now, you know, it's kind of the king of the hill scenario where Android's crowing about being king of the hill, and Apple, you know, iOS users are saying, well, you know, we've been king of the hill longer and there's more Apple devices out there. BlackBerry saying, well, you know, we've been out even longer and we're, you know, we're doing much better. But you can't deny the growth in Android. And there's an estimate that I saw out there that worldwide we're going to see two kings of the hill, Symbian and Android, in about 2014, that'll have most of the market share. And the other ones will kind of go by the wayside like Palm has.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of sad. But I'll be interested in seeing that. Symbian, of course, has its own set of apps and things like that, but I don't think they have quite the developer community.
They don't.
With programs like Titanium, with Appcelerator, that it's, I think, the same company, and the App Inventor and all of those products that let you develop apps. Now, App Inventor lets you develop fairly simplistic programs, and Titanium Appcelerator lets you develop very robust programs.
And there's no question that Google has been very forthcoming, very, you know, welcoming to the development community. They understand that that's what's necessary to continue this trend.
Yep. I'm very interested in playing with App Inventor because it's about my speed. I'm a fairly slow programmer to begin with, low-level guy, but I just got time. But it looks like a pretty neat product, and I think that one of the things that we will see over time is that the more individuals who get involved, the more robust the community. We got to take a break. Back in just a couple of minutes, Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Peter Skripka, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We are Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Got a computer question? Call the boys now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free 800-790-0415. Online at soundbites.org. Soundbites continues next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after...
No.
Oh, my God in heaven. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Benry.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Peter Skripka.
And at 43 minutes after the...
Last break, and we got it right.
I am so sorry. It's so automatic. Our next caller... Save me here, Joe. Save me for myself. Our next caller is Joe from Buffalo. Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Howdy. Well, the first comment I'd like to make is this Microsoft Security Essentials. Gee, yeah, we sold you this operating system that's so crappy you need this other product to put on it. It's like, I don't trust people that are...
He's saying it. I didn't...
To product to... Go ahead.
I'm saying... Joe's saying it. I didn't...
Joe looks forward to your emails.
What's your email address, Joe, so we can help folks?
Anyway, what I was wondering is I've seen all these ads by AT&T. They say, oh, okay, our GSM system, you know, you can talk and do data simultaneously. They imply like, oh, okay, you can't do that on Verizon Wireless or any of the other carriers because, oh, you just can't do that. I mean, what's the real truth on that, and is the same going to be true for LTE?
Actually, I just read something about that this morning, that Verizon is hoping to have talk and surf by next year. But let's Peter probably knows.
Yeah, no question. That is the condition today. On Verizon's current CDMA network, which is the same technology for Sprint, you cannot talk and surf at the same time on a device. Now, how important is that to you? Do you really need to do that? That's going to determine which devices you purchase, maybe even which carrier you're with. Now, you asked about LTE. LTE will allow for simultaneous talk and data sessions. Now, there are devices out there currently on CDMA networks that will allow you to use Wi-Fi simultaneous with your voice over your cellular network. So those lines are certainly being blurred. Those things will resolve themselves here in the near-term future.
Well, now, on the other hand, I was on my droid the other last week. I did a talk for the Girl Scouts, and it was out in the middle of nowhere.
Right, yeah, that's what I was just going to say. You talk on the phone while your GPS.
GPS was running, and I got a phone call, and the voice, the GPS lady, my best friend in the whole world when I'm in the middle of nowhere with no lights anywhere, she kept interrupting the phone call to tell me where to turn. So that worked.
No question. That will work. That's just like sending and receiving a text message. While you're on the phone,
right?
You can be interrupted. Hear that little beep while you're on the phone talking.
Right.
That's a text message. It's a very small, packet there. Packets that you're just sending the data back and forth.
It's multitasking.
All right.
But is it multitasking?
So that's totally separate then from SMS then.
It is. When we're talking about data in the context that AT&T is differentiating their service, we're talking about laptops and email and web browsing on a handset. Those are things.
Okay, now, tethering.
Tethering, absolutely. Now there is the opportunity, or I should say the capability within CDMA networks to do both data and voice, but it is not something that those carriers have enabled. And it is being done in other parts of the world, but it is expensive. And let's face it, they've already moved past CDMA. LTE is a GSM standard technology.
The other thing I'd like to mention is, you know, it's extraordinarily expensive to text these days. I don't understand why people put up with the carriers charging, you know, a dime and 25 cents per message. But Google Voice, if you subscribe to that, that can do SMS. You can either send it from a web page, or if you receive an SMS to your Google Voice number, you can forward it to an email address.
Right, right. Well, we remain, I firmly believe, a third world country when it comes to cellular service and what we get and what we compared to what we pay. And you go to a lot of other countries, and some of those things don't exist. You know, you pay flat rates for massive amounts of whatever you want to do, and it's cheaper than here, and it's faster than here, and the carriers here are charging what they believe the market will bear, and as long as we keep paying it, they'll keep charging it.
There's no question. And to support the kind of innovation that we're seeing, and really the first, you know, on the planet, the first LTE deployment is going to be happening here shortly. And there's just a ton of money gone in before they even put up the first tower, before they even modified the first tower, any hardware, they paid for that spectrum. And so they're looking at making their money back. There's no question. What does it cost to send or receive an SMS message on the, from the carrier standpoint? Not a lot. But they've got to maintain and continue to upgrade those networks to get the level of service that we expect.
Right. When they bought that spectrum, they spent hundreds of millions of dollars on it.
Oh, billions. Absolutely.
And so they're not going to just give it away. And I do get that. I truly do get that.
Sure. And then the question becomes, you know, do you want to have that ubiquity that you really require? If you're going to get a cell phone and you're traveling from here to Indiana, you want to have coverage throughout that whole area, throughout that whole drive.
And I do love the fact that my daughter is 700 miles away and I don't pay to talk to her.
Right.
I love that. And if she makes a call anywhere on the Verizon network, it's a local call.
Well, and compare that to when we were growing up. And it was the parent, parents saying, be quiet, I'm on a long-distance call. This costs a lot extra. And it was expensive, right?
And
everyone used you had to call, like, after 11 at night and all that. That's ridiculous.
And everyone used to be on a party line, and you had to pick up and listen and see if anyone else was already on it. Now we pay extra for party lines, three-way calls.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so how third world are we, really?
Well, yes, and I get that part. But it seems that way sometimes when we're asked to pay a lot for a lot. You know, and I get that. I'm not saying that we shouldn't pay for it. I'm just saying that when you complain, realize that you have the choice of simply not having it.
No question. And
it also, you know, it costs millions or billions to put up a cell tower network, so it naturally limits the number of competitors you're going to have in that market.
Right. And to get those devices to be more a part of your life, the carriers have gone to great lengths, including teaming up together. I mean, you've got Verizon and AT&T together working out a mobile payment platform where you can use your handset to pay for that soda and Twinkies at the corner store.
Right.
I mean, that's going to be reality. And that's something that's good.
Well, you've been able to do that in Japan for 10 years.
No question. But to have it here and to have it across our financial system. Right,
and that's what I mean by third world. You know, they can do things we can't yet. Mm-hmm. And they did the innovation, and we're doing the following behind.
Yeah, and there's no question that we are behind on some of those things. The handsets. I mean, handsets were always ahead in Japan, in Korea. And that's actually where we're seeing some of the most innovative technology coming from.
Right.
You know, when you look at companies like HTC, which were creating phones, you know, private, you know, white label phones for carriers not too long ago. And now they're putting out these handsets, like the Droid Incredible, just as an example. Terrific phone. Terrific Android phone. Quality is there. Price point's where it needs to be.
Yeah.
And they're starting to actually advertise under their own brand name. They've been making phones for years that no one knew about.
Right.
And one thing I'd like to ask is the LTE network that's going up, will that natively support IP version 6?
Yes, it will. And when you're looking at what that network is capable of, it's not just the bandwidth, it's not just the speeds. We're talking about low latency, which essentially real time.
Right.
Sub 5 milliseconds, okay? We're looking at QoS. I'm not from what I've read, QoS won't be available from launch, but it will be eventually. So
QoS stands for quality of service.
Yeah, and you know, this is more than just, you know, additional speed. So you've got lower latency levels, enhanced security of those packets in the air, simplified worldwide roaming. I mean, LTE really is the we talked earlier about VHS versus beta.
Yep.
Right? And, you know, it's the VHS of 4G technology.
Yep. And I think that we're going to see some interesting developments come out of that, because once you have a capability like that, people are going to use it.
No question. One of the big areas for growth is going to be machine-to-machine communication. Now, we've heard an awful lot about smart home technology and having an Ethernet jack in the back of your fridge, and it's going to send you a text message when your fridge goes over 40 degrees or whatever it is, right? Stop and get milk on the way home. You know, I mean, there's, you know, people have some concerns about RFID technology on their milk jug going, you know.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is, we're going to have more and more machines talking to each other, whether it's in our home or our businesses. As it is right now, you're having servers talk to you and send you alerts when something goes out of spec. And from water pumping stations, whether it's sewers that are heading out or it's the water tanks and what the pressure levels are, those are the kinds of communications that we're going to see enabled more and more on these 4G networks and right. have more and more connections.
And so the question is, can we afford it?
Well, yeah, because it'll drive economies.
That's my hope, that the cost will be low enough or come down eventually low enough mm-hmm. that if I want to add my refrigerator to my data plan, I don't have to really seriously think about that.
Well, and
should I skip a movie a month to add my refrigerator to my phone?
Right. And that's the thing. Understanding, having that customer education, how many bytes of data or kilobytes or megabytes is this thing going to use? But, to have the integration of wireless technology across these devices that touch our lives on a daily basis, wouldn't you love to get a text message that says, you need to change your oil?
Yeah.
Because your car already has a brain in it.
Right.
Ford is doing that with the Ford Sync system now, and other car companies are starting to do that. We've been seeing commercials for things like that, too.
Right. That stuff is all available out there. There's a company called MyMinders. There's a product called Shift Alerts. People get their shifts on their cell phones. So, you have to work Monday 9 to 5, Tuesday, whatever. And it sends reminders when it's time for your shift so you're not late for work. I mean, those are innovative, different, exciting things that are happening regularly on cell phones now. And when more things are available, when more speed is available, when more products are available, I only see that growing.
And connecting these machines to information databases that are relevant to us, that are actionable, whether it's accident reconstruction because you've got the brain, or preventative maintenance on vehicles, equipment in manufacturing facilities, those are things that are, in the end, are going to save money for the customers because they're going to look at, hey, you know what? I can keep this from breaking.
Yep, that's exactly right. All right. That's it. Somehow you've wasted two entire hours of your life that you will never get back again listening to us.
Tomorrow is 42 day. 10-10-10.
10-10-10. And tomorrow is the release of the 10-10 version of Ubuntu. All right. We are done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray. I particularly want to thank Peter Skripka, who was kind enough to come and join us today and share in his vast knowledge about all things cellular. I'm Nick Francesco. You've been listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Save up your pennies because we are about to start our membership drive, and you know you want to be a member because you don't want to be a leech. We are right here, and we will be back next week on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Thanks for listening. See you next Saturday.